Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue. We have a terrific group of panelists. Let us get to it. WAMC's Alan Chartok joins us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph.
How are you, sir? How does it feel being a grandfather?
Well, I don't know. It makes me older, of course, but
there are plenty of people a lot younger than you who are grandfathers.
Oh, that's not the right thing to say.
Well, no.
That's right.
See, I thought it was the right thing to say.
Well, it wasn't. But anyway, but the great thing is the miracle of life. You look at that little baby and you just see the little hands going and the mouth working and the toes going. And you say, boy, this is really the most extraordinary thing. And so it really is something. And we welcome Noah Ilan into the world. And it's really something.
How's mom doing? Is she all right?
Mom is great. Grandma is beyond herself.
Good.
Mom, Dad, Grandma, Grandpa, I'm sure all very, very happy.
Everybody's happy.
So are we.
Grandpa squared, yes. All right, let me introduce the rest of the panel to you. Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick is here. Associate editor of the Times, Judian Mike Spain, is here. Thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
Happy to be here.
All right, so let's get to the news of the day and talk about what is happening in this big complicated world of ours. And I guess we can start with Ukraine and talk about what is happening there. And just so people know, Ray picked topics last night because I didn't think I was coming in.
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right, well, I'll come in because I can sort of talk. And this is better
than sound great.
Watching Regis. So.
is Regis still on?
No.
No, but the show is on, right?
That's right. So this year is the centennial of the First World War 100 years ago. This month in April 1914, no one thought there would be a war, but war began, triggered by events in Eastern Europe. By the end of July, it came as an enormous shock, in retrospect, almost like the Titanic hitting an iceberg. A century later, our focus is again on Eastern Europe, the site of a regional conflict that threatens to entangle the world's leading powers. Those words written by Newt Gingrich. And my question for you is, you know, how much of this do you feel that those parallels can be made?
Well, it is frightening, and the part of it that is most frightening to me is that no one expected that a dust-up in Eastern Europe would result in the First World War. And nobody is, except for Newt Gingrich and John McCain, you know, people are not really looking at Ukraine, the Ukraine crisis, as being anything that's going to affect us. I think the polls show that many Americans don't know where Ukraine is. So, and we're, as John, as Newt Gingrich points out in his commentary on CNN and on his blog, the Americans are war weary. So there's sort of this disconnect where people are not paying that much attention to it and, you know, would rather just move on and talk about something else when that could be dangerous.
But it's important to keep an eye on, or keep history in mind all the time, because that's one of the reasons Americans should still be aware of what's going on in the world, still care, not just pass that story by, but pay attention, think about it, and know what's going on and be involved.
And I agree with that, but I think we're all sort of in that, and Alan, I guess I'm curious as to your thoughts on this, of we seem to all be in that point of, okay, but what do we do about it? Is Alan there? Maybe
Hello?
Alan's microphone is not working.
Mrs. O'Higgins.
Okay.
Well, you know,
all
Alan
right.
will weigh in very shortly with with
okay.
Okay.
his point of view. But
all right.
What should we do?
You know, I mean, I think that's the point, isn't it? That we don't. I agree with you completely, Judy.
Yes.
I mean, it seems
mm-hmm.
like we should be involved. We should know what's going on. But that kind of rallying of the troops, which I thought was an interesting sidebar to Newt Gingrich's story here, is that these things come together, there's a confluence, and all of a sudden, you know, it hits you, but what's the right thing? And I don't know that we know that yet.
But, you know, we're doing it. We're putting it in our newspapers. You're putting it on the air. We're talking about it. But does that make people Not aware. They're aware if they want to be. Does it make them interested in what's going on? I mean, how do you get people engaged in foreign policy when people are weary of foreign policy that gets our kids killed over there, you know?
And frankly, more people are worried about where lunch is coming from.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of distractions. And you know, that I don't mean that cynically. People are busy. And it was pretty interesting, as I was driving in today, John Oliver was touting his new HBO show.
Yeah.
It was a great interview.
It was.
But one of the things he said, which I think was exactly right, is that he's married to an Iraq war veteran, an American, a woman who is an Iraq war veteran. And he says that most people in the U.S. aren't even really aware that we had a war or still are engaged around the globe, and they really don't care that much. And it sort of is reminiscent of what we heard before World War I and heard before World War II, and it's a little scary.
I think it's interesting, the news that was on the BBC this morning, that the Standard & Poor's now has downgraded Russia's status to BBB-, which is just a hair above junk bond status. And, you know, I would think the financial markets and the pressure are different now than they were prior to World War I. In other words, I think that the financial markets hold much more sway now than they did then as far as a global picture. And so maybe that pressure keeps it from going to that level that Newt Gingrich is talking about.
When you have the Ukraine's interim prime minister telling the interim cabinet in remarks that were broadcast live, attempts at military conflict in Ukraine will lead to a military conflict in Europe. The world has not yet forgotten World War II, but Russia already wants to start World War III. That's chilling. And I want to get, now, sure, you can say that it's, you know,
rhetoric
and saber rattling and so forth. However, what us also, I want to go to something that Judy said, which is, you know, what do we do? What do we do as citizens? But what do we do as a government? Because we don't even seem to have a consensus on that.
Right. It doesn't appear to that President Obama has a lot of options at this point. Perhaps he does that we don't know about, but talking about, you know, about sanctions and talking to other leaders in of European countries, but what else can we do? But I think you've got to stay informed and involved, and at least we are busy, it's true, but we do also have time for a lot of crap in our life, and I think
we take time for it.
That's right. Yes,
we choose to.
Candy Crush should not exist as long as there are these issues on the table. We're going to take a break. We're going to try to do a little technical scrubbing and find Alan, and we'll be back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC comes from Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. Carrie Haddad Gallery, presenting Under the Influence, featuring abstract paintings by Lionel Gilbert, Judith Lindblom, and William Bond Walker. Reception this Saturday from 6 to 8 p.m. Open daily, CarrieHaddadGallery.com. And Ithaca College, a community of scholars and leaders working to help create the future. Ithaca.edu/ready for information.
As we dinner jazz our way into this morning hour, we
welcome
you
time.
All back. Mike Spain, Judy Patrick, Ray Graff, and I believe Alan is back on with us. Good morning, Alan.
I'm here by an older methodology than we usually use. It's called the telephone.
We were, you know, it's one of those things, I think any cell phone user knows this, where you've gone through this whole conversation and then you suddenly realize that the person is lost.
Yeah.
Right.
And all of a sudden you were gone. So, but I was asking you, and I'll let you key into this. We were talking about this whole Ukraine situation, and Judy very rightly pointed out that, you know, a lot of us, and Mike too, look, some of us don't even know where Kiev is, or Ukraine. That was your point. And then also that we don't, as a people, have fully paid attention to this. And my question to you was, okay, but what do we do as a government? What do we do as a world power? What do we do with our quote unquote allies and the other nations who are affected by this of coming up with some sort of solid plan? And if not even a plan, because the only words that you really hear from anyone is that they have denounced what the Russians are doing. And what do you do beyond that?
Well, you know, Joe, all those questions are first rate. I am sure that those are the questions that they're being asked in the State Department and the Situation Room. As people who think they're far brighter than we are sitting around coming up with basically the same answers that your questions imply. If we don't do something, then it empowers Putin even more. We have a Chamberlain situation in which he starts to take back not only Ukraine, but really, since he's been so obvious about this, why doesn't he go into Moldova? Why doesn't he go into Estonia? And each of those places, of course, I'm sure, are shivering right now in terms of his buildup of the great Russian Federation that he wants to replace the old Soviet model of which he was a part. So I think that there are no easy answers. Most Americans not only don't know where Kiev is, they don't know where the Pacific Ocean is, or at least a lot of our students don't. It's unbelievable, but they don't. So are they tied in? Well, they're tied in by basis of nationalism, chest beating. We can't let those Ruskies do this to us. On the other hand, we've been through a lot of war in the last several years, and nobody really wants that again.
There's an article line in the New York Times article that says the events on Friday morning were marked by an icy hostility between Moscow and Washington, reminiscent of the Cold War. And that struck me because it seems that even though we have moved on, even though we have gone far away from what the Cold War was, we still very much have it in our DNA, don't we? Or our sort of default mode, as you just said, those Ruskies, you know, that's sort of that's how we grew up, most of us.
No, that's right. And there's always got to be an enemy. You know, last night, in honor of our new grandchild, we went to see the new film, Noah. Did you see it yet, Joe?
No, I haven't. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's very frightening because, you know, the premise way back then in the Bible was that, you know, mankind had really done itself in, and hence the Great Flood. And Noah's work, and of course you take a look around the world right now, and the situation is not good. But there is something in our DNA that says we've got to have an enemy. As I've often said, even if you believe just in evolution and not the Bible, the minute the first two amphibians got legs and walked out of the slime and went into two caves, they looked at each other and said, "They're not me. Kill them." You know.
Yeah.
So that's part of what goes on in this world, and there are some very bad actors who exacerbate it and use it for their own good.
How would you rate right now the job that John Kerry is doing as Secretary of State?
You know, I think everybody's giving him credit for working hard. You know, I've never been a big John Kerry fan, but I have to tell you, I think the guy is really working his behind off and trying. But it depends, as in everything else, whether you're measuring on how hard you're trying or whether you're measuring on results. And in terms of results, I don't think anybody is waving any flags and saying that Kerry is a hero. Maybe the other panelists disagree with that.
Well, I just had a question going back to the Ukraine for you, Alan. You know, folks like the neocons are, you know, like Newt Gingrich and,
sure,
you know, John McCain, et cetera, are saying we should be arming, you know, the Ukraine, the Ukrainian army and the government. We should bolster it with, you know, sure, military armaments. And it's clear Obama's administration has been very reticent about doing that and maybe adding to the, you know, the tension and the buildup. What can we do besides economic sanctions if we're not going to arm them?
Well, that's exactly the problem, Mike. We don't really have much we can do. There was an excellent piece on NPR this morning talking about how the very things that the United States is talking about doing, which is reducing the number of boots that are in the Army and making these strategic units that can go in, and here they are right next door. They've already gone in. They're infiltrating, obviously. And so there really isn't much we can do. And then you assume, pardon me, that they're going to get it. They're going to get Ukraine the same way they are. A question: do we really know who these Ukrainians are? You know, I think some of them are bad actors. I don't think there's any question. And I think a lot of our listeners have been writing in and telling us about that. And two, if we give them the weapons, right, and then they come in and they'll win, who gets the weapons?
We're going to take a break on that note, and we have a couple letters, which Alan will read on our way back in after our break. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, and we'll continue our conversation after the short break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. Ray Graff, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain, and Alan Chartok with us. Good morning. You sound better, Alan.
Yes, that's because they got the old way working again.
Excellent. The old new way.
The old way working again. Okay, want some letters?
Yes.
From Ben. Hi, Alan. I'm sure I've seen a story in today's Times. You're about to obscure provision tucked inside a Coast Guard spending bill that could prevent millions of people facing hunger from recalling life-saving American food aid? Question mark. You know, it's such a long letter that I can't do justice to it here. Brian said, hi, I think Putin is acting in his country's short-term self-interest now because he believes he has Europe over a barrel with Russia's supply of gas. That could change as more natural gas comes online from other sources, including the United States. I do believe his ambitions have limits. I don't think Russia can afford to fight guerrilla wars in Western Ukraine and other former blocs. And that's from Brian. And then we have heard from back, who says, from Jim, I'm so sorry. By coincidence, I just began to reread The Guns of August, which described the outbreak of World War I. What struck me were the similarities between Germany then and Russia now, as well as the Kaiser and Putin. Both felt aggrieved that their countries don't get the respect due to them and were destined for a dominant role in Europe and beyond. That is from Jim. And then John. John says, I consider myself reasonably well-informed and interested in geopolitical and social events. However, I personally am more interested in watching Governor Christie twist slowly in the wind in domestic political tit-for-tat than the situation in Ukraine. Guilty as charged, Americans are now not paying attention. Okay, guilty as charged. And let's see. I guess that, and Jerome, Ray nailed it. Economic cost of annexing Crimea will dwarf all benefit to Putin. Play diplomatic Akito, and this gambit will fall under his own weight. That's from Jerome. Mm. That's what I got.
Okay. Do you have the one from Lily?
No, you read that one. Go ahead.
I don't see how the public worrying about Ukraine will change U.S. foreign policy. There was a huge outcry and protest against the war in Iraq, but there was no stopping that war from proceeding. It's nice to think that we're doing something by talking about this issue, but the truth is we, the people, have little, if any, power when it comes to war. With a sad face.
Emoticon, I should note.
So we welcome your letters. We love hearing from you. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. It is 9:40 on Friday morning. It's time for our casino update.
Hey!
Everyone's a winner. Step right
presenting
up.
Step right our up. Casino update this morning, we have Mike Spain and Judy Patrick.
Well, you know, the big story today is now we're learning the names of the 22 who anteed up
$1 million
each.
Yes.
And, you know, it really is like a poker game here, you know, because some people are saying, this is my company, this is the company that I'm associated with, and this is the lot I'm looking at or the site I'm looking at. Others are more coy. They're not even identifying who it is that put the $1 million up for them, because they're coming in the form of these names of these national corporations that have done gaming and casinos and gambling facilities across the country. And some are saying, well, I'm not going to say which one. Like in the case of Schenectady, there's a proposal for a casino as part of that whole redevelopment north of downtown. And David Buco says that somebody has put up money on behalf of a site in that project, but he isn't saying who. And there's others who are, talking about other sites without being specific. And there could be some more surprises, and we'll find out more. What else are you hearing?
You know, another issue here is whether or not there's local support for these casinos, because things are happening so quickly, a kind of a railroad effect. And so we want to talk to make sure the communities who may get a casino, the people in those communities, if they have something to say about it, they have a chance to say it. We talked to people in Schenectady, the city council, and some of the county legislators, you know, to see where do they stand. And so at least we can get some discussion going. Because up in Saratoga County, one of the issues was that community became aware there was the division, and the developers walked away from that site. But in Skodek, that board voted in favor of proceeding with the casino, although there's some discussion about exactly what.
Right, local residents were unaware of the meeting where the people in East Greenbush actually got together and the town board and gave a generic approval of a casino concept. And then we found out about the Saratoga Gaming folks looking at a site off Route 4 in East Greenbush. And it's interesting in Schenectady. I believe I read in the Daily Gazette that there's going to be a vote next week by the city council on whether to back it. And it sounds like it's getting some traction, support.
And also, they take these votes without a real strong idea of what exactly is being proposed. I mean, they are generic proposals, and these are huge decisions.
But the deadline was so quick that you either had to say, well, maybe we'll want this, and ante up, as Mike said, or say, well, we're out of the running.
Yeah, don't you think that was accidentally on purpose?
you might be onto something.
They knew exactly what they were doing. And the big news that just came out of everything I just heard is that the associate editor of the Times Union reads the Daily Gazette.
Well, that doesn't. I'm sure it's vice versa, right?
I'm
sure you're right.
Cover.
A couple of fine newspapers serving the Capital Region. Now, what I was going to say was that the lure here, of course, is the promise of money. You know, communities and city councils who are trying to balance budgets, are trying to fix streets, trying to ward off tax increases to do all this, are seeing dollar signs before their eyes, and they're approving generic plans that when they get the details they may not like, and it may be too late.
You know, in the meantime, if we were going to put a grocery store or a pharmacy on a corner, we would be reviewing this for a year. These casinos.
Isn't that amazing? That's a great point.
It just happened very quickly. Out in Amsterdam, these things have to be reviewed publicly. Out down in Schoharie County, they're all over the place, and I think the public needs to start paying closer attention. And we as the news media have to really try to get some details out of these people, although it's very difficult.
Well, I think it is difficult. And I mean, to Alan's point of accidentally on purpose, you have this tight deadline, and it almost forces us as the media, to say, okay, these are all the stories, and then the public just kind of glazes over.
It does get confusing. One important point here is that they do have until the end of June, these 22 applicants, or pre-applicants, I guess they would be, to withdraw their $1 million. And wouldn't you think, Alan, that some of these players are going to be doing some backroom negotiations. Like, we have David Flom, who's got a plan for Albany County off Exit 23. He's the Rochester developer who proposed that. He's also down at Woodbury Commons, hooked up with a casino company. And then you have the Saratoga folks who moved to East Greenbush, but they also have something down near Newburgh. You know, maybe there'll be a little nod to each other so that they could get what they want. So
Yes, Mike, you make a good point. And as I said yesterday, and as I believe today, besides the immorality of the whole thing, I think the federal prosecutors ought to be taking a very, very close look at who is giving money, what agreements have been made, what politicians have gotten huge amounts in their big war chests from these folks. Hint, hint.
But you can bet the $1 million application fee for that background investigation probably won't be going into that aspect of their background.
You know, even June is not a lot of time for, say, Schenectady. That is a late comer to this. Mm-hmm. For the people who are involved to gauge the public interest, and if it, as in Saratoga's case, where the public seems to be against it, get their money back in time.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of maneuvering that can happen, and you know, I think we should be urging that there be transparency, and I think that they allowed these companies to come in, and like somebody has put up $1 million for Schenectady, Rush Entertainment or some name like that, and it's not, well, it appears that way. That's speculation, I should say. We don't really know who has partnered with Galesi Group and David Buco to do it, but
because
they won't tell you. And it just seems that if you're going to put a casino in your backyard or your front yard, the community ought to be able to weigh in on it. I know that they technically are not able to do any zoning changes or anything like that under the state rules, but, you know, I think community involvement will only make it a more successful effort.
No, I think that's a profound effort. And while we're at it, let's make everybody who posts online put their name on it, as they do on their letters to the newspaper, so we can have some transparency besides, you know. I'm seeing the analogy, don't you?
Yes.
Well, I'm a big believer in people coming clean and saying who they are.
Yeah,
my name is Larry. No, I'm sorry.
we want to take a break, and we want to get on to our bonus round and try to get some what?
Bonus round?
Bonus round.
You're talking raised language.
Other points. Ding, 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 ding. Journalists, as we stand right now, our next big deadline is what?
Oh, June 30th would be when they can withdraw whatever's left of this $1 million. I guess the state can use some of it for administrative processing until then. So maybe the longer they stay in it, the less of that million they'll get back.
Right, and there's a big meeting next Wednesday where all the players are supposed to come together in a room, shake hands, and get the actual details of how much money they really need to spend to make this happen.
Wow. And will that be public?
And will that? We want it to be.
We shall see.
Eventually.
We shall see.
Hey, Joe, we got a terrific fast letter. Thank you for talking about foreign policy as well as lunchbox issues. What is happening in Ukraine is going to affect all of us, whether we're living in a McMansion or a mud hut. I think that's really nice.
Very nice. We're going to read some more letters and talk about some other issues when we come back. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll continue after this break.
Support for WAMC comes from Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center, a master's in social work program, a personal and in-person education and advanced direct practice, hudsonvalley.adelphi.edu. East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals, eastheaven.com for information. And NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick, associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, and Ray Graff make up your panel this morning. And we welcome you to participate, roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, before we go on to some other issues in the bonus round, you have some other letters, I believe?
Yes. We've just gotten a message. Alan is spreading the most dangerous and pernicious myth about humanity that somehow warlike behavior is in our genes. Evidence of war starts to appear only 10,000 years ago.
Only at the beginning of recorded history.
With the growth of large cities and government, nothing genetic about it. Okay. And then we heard from Cheryl, who said, early this morning, BBC journalist tried to nail a Russian representative as to why the Russian government does not address the pro-Russian forces to disband the government buildings. That is part of the Geneva Agreement from last week. Why doesn't the Russian government get on TV? Russian rep could say, hemmed hawed, I had not heard of this part of the Geneva Agreement, and I believe it could be extremely helpful. Why hasn't it been kept so quiet, says our wonderful letter writer, Cheryl. Okay, and then, what do you see here, Joe? And then, oh yes, and then horse cats.
What?
Horse cats. Yeah.
What the
Nancy,
heck?
Who is horse cats. Okay,
Nancy.
I'm only going to read the first sentence. Alan said we always have to have an enemy. This is a planet of polarities. No matter the issue, there's always the pro and con. A guru of mine once said, hippies create police. Please create hippies.
Yeah.
Very profound.
Horse cats.
And there's,
yeah,
a lot, and there's a lot more than that. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So let us go. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. So we have two more issues that I want to get to. Let us talk about the proposed U.S. regulation of electronic cigarettes and other tobacco products, prompting industry concern that it could slow innovation and public health worries that the rules won't go far enough. The Food and Drug Administration has released a 241-page proposal unveiled yesterday. Will ban the sale to minors of tobacco products that are currently unregulated, including e-cigarettes, cigars, pipe tobacco, and hookahs. The rules will also require ingredient disclosure, federal approval, and warning labels, but don't ban flavors such as bubblegum, internet sales to adults, or TV ads unless they make health claims. Mm. So some are saying that they're too strict, and others are saying they're not strict enough.
It's a dilemma. We were talking during the break. You know, e-cigarettes, to some, is a path for people who are smokers to back off of dangerous smoking and use this as an interim. And certainly if you go from smoking cigarettes and filter-free cigarettes to e-cigarettes, it's got to have a positive impact on your health. You'll be taking in less garbage into your lungs. On the other hand, people are saying e-cigarettes are a path for young people or others to get to the heavy-duty tobacco, which is more dangerous to your health and more risky to the people around you. A lot of people want to tax e-cigarettes the way, with excise taxes, the way that you tax regular cigarettes. And others are saying they should be kept cheaper, because if they're cheaper, people might navigate to those and ultimately be healthier. So it's a really thorny issue. And then the manufacturers are not making health claims publicly, but they're letting me do it, I guess, right here.
What are those health claims, Mike?
Right.
No, it's an infomercial.
Letting the media do it and independent scientists do it and then report it in the media and let that debate go on. Because if they begin to make health claims about it, then they are going to be under regulation by the FDA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So and in New York, there's folks that are trying to pretty much do the same act, because I think the FDA, they've had taken too much time, and that in New York we should ban, they should be included in the indoor smoke ban. I didn't know that they were not included in the indoor smoke ban.
New York City has it, I believe, already.
Already, because they were ahead of the rest of the state on that.
You see people out smoking them in malls and so forth.
Yeah, do you? I haven't really noticed, obviously, because you don't obviously smell them. There's not a noticeable odor. Like,
right, just a vapor.
Yeah. That's going to become an issue, and they don't want people in state offices to use them now. And
I say tax the heck out of all of them.
Isn't that what it's all about, money in the long run?
It's also it prevents bad behavior.
I see.
So I'm for it. I just wanted to ask the panel a question because I was fascinated by the discussion. Is there any amongst you who would ever tell us that they have ever used a hookah?
A hookah.
Mm. Yeah, I can tell you I've never used a hookah.
I've never used a hookah.
Wait, did I just hear Ray say I've never used a hookah?
Yeah, I'm not even exactly sure what a hookah looks like.
I drove by one today in Schenectady. And I said to my wife, I can't believe there's a hookah on Upper Union Street.
I can't believe you're going there, Mike. Wow.
There is.
Great. That's terrific.
There is. We have a whole store right down here, right? Three storefronts down.
Yeah.
That sells them, that has them in the.
Really?
They're legal, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
They
should be taxed.
I've already been asked by an employee if they can smoke an electronic cigarette on the job. And when I was on an airplane last week, you can't smoke an e-cigarette or you can't use an e-cigarette on a plane. So all these issues about no smoking in public parks, no smoking within 100 feet of a child, all these things are going to come up when we start really addressing the e-cigarette issue.
And as we address this, and this is what I don't quite understand about the FDA report, which is to say, okay, well, we don't want these products made available. We don't want it to be a gateway. We don't want to allow this to be a gateway for kids to start smoking. And yet we're going to allow you to sell bubblegum flavoring that you can put in your e-cigarette. So it's like you're smoking bubble gum as opposed, because I can't imagine a 45-year-old guy getting bubble gum.
Give me those bubble gum flavored Pall Malls, would you?
Don't even get me started on that one. I mean, I know this guy who sells phony chewing tobacco made with to children.
What?
Made with bubble gum. I don't like.
Where,
I don't like any of it.
I don't know about this one.
Big League Chew.
It's gum.
Yeah, it's gum. Yeah.
Oh, come on now. It's gum.
It's gum that is made to look like chewing tobacco, which gives people cancer of the jaw. Get it?
Whatevs. So it's gum.
You are developing behavior, which is bad. We don't allow it with cigarettes anymore, do we?
No, we do not sell candy cigarettes.
So don't even get me started on that one.
It is an interesting point.
All right, Grandpa.
That's right. You have a whole different perspective on it now as a grandparent whose grandson will be navigating all this when he's a teenager.
You said a mouthful there, Sonny.
Mm.
Nice.
Final story. As much as I would just like to end on that because it's a great
place. Great.
I'm all for that. Let's get that jazz music back.
Roll the cocktail jazz and let's get out of here.
Real quick, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky is avidly courting a small but influential cluster of philanthropists and entrepreneurs who have exerted enormous intellectual influence on conservative policy, connecting with rich libertarians as he weighs a run for the White House. Alan, do you think it'll happen?
It could happen. I don't see any reason. I mean, clearly, he'd love to do it. Clearly, I've heard from a lot of students and others you would not expect it from, that they love the guy and his father. I have never understood this. The guy wants to be president. I think that's fairly clear. And if he could make a dent without making a fool of himself, I think he'll do it.
And what impact would that have on a general election?
It would cost the Republicans vote. Yeah. No question.
We'd get Hillary elected, as Ray said a little while ago.
In the break.
So if you're the Republican Party, then when would you turn around what's the nice word I can say?
What push
would you put on him to try to counter that?
I think I know what will happen happen. I mean, if he leans this way and he's got a credible backing to do this, he can negotiate with the GOP, who will probably have a difficult time finding unity in the next election, and win himself the next election. He's a young guy. He could go for 2020.
Well, it's true, but he wants to do it while Papa's still alive.
Hmm. Well, we're going to end there, and I thank you all for taking part.
Your voice made it very well.
Thank you, sir. Alan, Z-Pak is an incredible drug.
Do you do that in a hookah?
No. And by the way, Mike, on your way home, say hello to the hookah for us. Alan, Ray, Judy, and Mike, have a wonderful weekend. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our love to your family. Alan, have a wonderful weekend with the newbie.
We'll do our best.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll be back and continue after the short break.